From the secrets we keep to the lies we tell ourselves, get ready to challenge the status quo and dare to ask the questions others are too afraid to ask. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. Join Francesca as she ignites a meaningful conversation about things that really matter. Buckle up and get real. Now, to give you something to talk about all week long, here's Francesca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This portion of the show is sponsored by Clemens Painting. Imagine coming home to a fresh new look that reflects your style. Let Scott at Clemens Painting bring your vision to life. From classic to contemporary, Scott will help you fall in love with your home again. I did, and I couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076 or visit Clemens Painting on Facebook. Okay, just a little housekeeping. If you miss part of this show, you're going to definitely want to mosey on over to my iTunes page, and I would love it if you would leave a review, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. You can follow me on Facebook. You can follow the Francesca Luca Show on Facebook, and of course, if you know someone who would resonate with the show, please share. All right, we're going to rock and roll. What would you do if your mother lied to you about who your father was? David Tereshuk is a journalist whose decades-long investigative career both in Britain and in the United States has involved prying answers out of both victims and perpetrators of war and TV interviews with Tony Blair, Hugo Chavez, Nelson Mandela, and Kofi Annan. His fearless reporting never let on that he was carrying a secret himself, that he didn't know who his father was. And it wasn't until David was in his 50s that his mother came clean and told him she'd been, brace yourself, raped at the age of 15, brace yourself again, by a Catholic priest. But a total lack of evidence proving her claim suggested that maybe she was lying. So David set out to discover the truth in his new memoir, A Question of Paternity, which he's here to talk to me about tonight. And I bet you might know someone who would find this story fascinating, including yourself, obviously. So please share with them. And don't forget to subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Big welcome to you, David. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Francesca Luca Show.
Hello, Francesca. Very good of you to have me on your show. I'm very glad to be here.
David, your mother, whom you called Hilda, became pregnant with you at the age of 15. Why do you think she refused to talk about it for so much of your life?
Well, I guess it had a lot to do with the conditions in which we lived. We were, remember, this is a long time ago, and in a fairly rural part of the world, the borderland between England and Scotland. It's called the debatable land by historians, debatable in that it was, I suppose, debated about between the English and the Scottish about whether who
owned the territory, right? Yeah.
But debatable is kind of a gentle way of putting it. What they actually did was fight over it.
I had a sneaky suspicion you were going to say that.
Yeah, and this debatable land was unclear about its own nationality, if you like. The argument still went on, are we Scottish or are we English? But more to the point, I think, our family was poor. That was the one qualification we had for living where we did. We lived in public housing, not the big sort of projects that you'd get in American cities as public housing, but a small tract of housing in a large village, I think you might call it, or a small town. Mm-hmm. And it was the late 1940s, and the idea of unwed pregnancy, teenage pregnancy at that, was scandalous. And clearly, some sort of story was needed to cover up this scandal emanating from our family. And a deal was done, effectively, by the person who was in charge of our family, which was my grandmother. My grandfather had died 8 years before this, during World War II. Not fighting in the war, but just at the time of the war. And she made my mother, this is, again, it's my mother's story of this. This is what I heard from my mother, that I was allowed into the home because my mother had been sent away almost 200 miles for me to be born. And then I was allowed back into the house on certain terms and conditions. The first condition was that my mother would stop doing her high school education. She was possibly the first person in our family to get beyond just primary education. She was in high school in a nearby city, but she had to stop doing that and go out to work to earn my keep, in a sense. She became the family's only breadwinner. One more mouth to feed was, in my grandmother's view, just too much, and I had to be paid for one way or another. And the other term or condition that was applied was that they invented a story, the story to cover up or explain my sudden appearance. I'm not sure how they thought they would get away with this, but the idea was that I would be passed off as my mother's little brother. The last child of my grandmother's brood. She'd already had 10 children, 9 who survived, one died early. And this extraordinary fiction was maintained, I think, for a while. As I say, I'm not sure how they thought they'd get away with it. My grandmother was well past childbearing age at this point.
How old was she?
Oh, she must have been in her late 50s, early 60s.
Oh, by this point. Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
And and I don't know when it became clear that I actually was my mother's child, but for a long time, it was just very vague for me, very uncertain. I didn't know whose I was. So, in a sense, while I don't want to over psychoanalyze it, I was very unsure about who I was.
Right. Oh,
I called my mother Hilda because she seemed like my older sister, and I called her two brothers, younger brothers, who seemed playmates to me. They were certainly more like brothers than uncles, which is technically what they actually were, and I learned that much later. But for quite a while, I was just in this uncertain, hazy world of not quite knowing how I fitted into the family, to the village, and ultimately, I think, in the world at large.
But is the story true that she was raped by a Catholic priest? Because
I cannot say with absolute conviction that she was not. I took it as read when she finally did tell me this story. It was a shocking account, of course, and I talked to her a lot about it on the day she told me, but mm-hmm. she never returned to the topic. I thought, and as I was talking to her, all the tools of my journalistic trade were triggered, but I'm not sure that I did the most searching interview of my life with her. I think I was so much in shock myself that I didn't cross-question her in great detail. I mean, I don't think anyone would, confronted with their own mother telling them something like this. And I regret that. I also thought that I would have other opportunities to go into the whole matter in more detail, mm-hmm. Which I did, but not with my mother's help. I researched it very thoroughly, and as I say, the conclusion is that while there were various suspects, if you like, amongst the priests who came to our village from from the nearby city where there was a Catholic church. We didn't have a Catholic church in our village. We weren't Catholics. So she happened to go to a Catholic mass with a Catholic friend, just out of curiosity, a high school friend who was from an Italian immigrant family and therefore was Catholic. And she was just interested to know what was going on. And she said that the priest had taken some kind of liking to her and walked her home, but then pulled her into a nearby garden and raped her, she said. And when I did my research, it became clear that there were a few possibilities, and indeed we narrowed it down to eventually, with the church's help, not that the church was all that helpful to begin with.
I wouldn't think so.
As they never are in cases of child... Well, at that stage...
Well, they're still
anyway,
not, yeah, yeah. yeah.
Well, no, still not exactly helpful, but on the other hand, they have been pressured by the Pope itself, Pope Francis, to institute systems of safeguarding minors from this kind of threat. And so even historical cases now are certainly in the British Catholic Church. The dioceses are obliged to take very seriously. And in my case, they eventually collaborated with the police, because even a historical crime like this, going back all the way to 1948, it would still be regarded as in need of investigation in the climate that's been engendered by all the exposures of child abuse by clerics. So we finally got help from the diocese, and even to the point of narrowing it down, as I say, to one particular priest. But the other investigative tool that we were using came into play here, and the modern miracle of scientific miracle of DNA analysis came into play, and it became very clear that this one prime suspect, as he had become in our minds, could not be my father. My DNA and his DNA wasn't in the databases, but very close relatives of his had their DNA, and it was totally different from mine. So that was a case of a lead leading nowhere.
So is that where the questioning still comes in? Because as I'm listening to you throughout all of this, I keep hearing that you're still not sure. Is it that you're not sure of who your father really is or was, or that you're not sure at all that your mother was raped?
I'm not totally sure. I'm not 100% certain. I don't have ironclad truth established for any of that.
Why would you question that, though? I'm curious why you would. Your mother telling you this, your grandmother telling you this. I'm curious why are you thinking that it wouldn't be true? Was your mother not an honest person?
In my experience, I don't remember ever any evidence of her telling me a lie.
Oh.
On the other hand, she could be extraordinarily evasive. And that's one of the troublesome questions that I try to address in the book. Could my mother have been an outright liar? I'm just baffled by it. I don't know why she would keep the secret from me for so long. I mean, times changed, mores changed, society's attitudes changed over time, and her being pregnant at that young age is no longer the kind of scandal in modern times that it was then. Mm-hmm. The question of her alleged rape is much more difficult to establish. I mean, she may well have been raped. She may well have been raped by a different priest that we never discovered. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there came up, as I probed into the subject more fully, other possibilities. It may even be the case that she was in a sexual relationship at that early stage with, of all things, a German prisoner of war.
Your investigative reporting skills could take you down so many rabbit holes. David, I don't want to cut you off, but we do need to take a short break. So when we come back, I'd really like to know what lengths you went to locate that priest who allegedly raped your mother. It sounds like you really weren't successful at it, but I'd like to get a little deeper delve into that. So listeners, stay with us here. Don't go anywhere.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next. The time is now to finally install that new patio or fire pit that's been in your dreams. Your home is ready to be beautified with stonework, but when the time comes, you want and need the best. That's where Stein Masonry comes in. Stein Masonry provides the best in high-quality construction and hardscaping services. With an experienced and dedicated team, they'll tailor any project to your specifications. When you decide it's time to enhance your home, don't mess with less than the best. Trust the guys you know. Stein Masonry, family-owned and operated and local. Visit them online today for a free quote at steinmasonry.com.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
You need help around the house. You need a handyman. How do you find just the one you're looking for? Go to locally owned and operated HandymanConnection.com. Handyman Connection puts you in touch with one of their carefully screened and background-checked craftsmen. You get the best help around for maintenance, installation, and remodeling services, carpentry, tiling, and flooring, and assistance with aging-in-place upgrades to your home. Handyman Connection also provides you with free in-home estimates and a one-year written warranty on labor from one of their experienced professionals. Call 781-829-3030 or visit handymanconnection.com. Your connection to quality craftsmen on the South Shore. One call, one connection.
Tired of living in space that's lost its luster? Your home is more than just a house. It's where memories are made. At Clemens Painting, they understand the importance of transforming your space. They pride themselves on attention to detail, cleanliness, and exceptional customer service. Only using the highest quality materials and techniques to ensure a long-lasting finish, they won't disappoint. Fully insured and offering free estimates, the fall is the perfect time to spruce up your space. Imagine coming home to a fresh new look that reflects your style. Let Scott at Clemens Painting bring your vision to life. From classic to contemporary, Scott will help you fall in love with your home again. I did and couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076 or find Clemens Painting on Facebook.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back, and let me reintroduce my guest tonight, David Turishek. He has written a book, A Question of Paternity, and it is a question of paternity about his own father. What would you do if your mother lied to you about who your father was? Welcome back, David.
Well, it's good to be with you.
So, David, it seems like you really went to great lengths to locate the priest who allegedly raped your mother. And it also, I'm hearing from the last segment that you weren't 100% successful. Are there any other theories about your father's identity that emerged along the way? I mean, like, you know, there's all these Ancestry.coms, MyHeritage, 23andMe. I know I did the 23andMe, and it was like, whoa. You know, pretty amazing. So I'm just curious if you went down that road at all.
Well, yes, eventually. To begin with, though, I was confronted with this shocking story of rape by a priest. And obviously the thing to do as any kind of investigator would want to, and particularly an adult child of someone who gets that kind of account of their origins from their own mother, I took it as read that she was telling me the truth, and my job was to find this man, speaking historically. Mm-hmm. So I went on, I used all my journalistic tools, I suppose, and those of historical analysis investigation too. I got a lot of help, particularly with the church side of things, because as we were suggesting in the earlier segment, it's well known that the church made a practice of covering up
right.
such cases as this, and went to great lengths to scrub the records and to often transfer priests from one part of the church's domain to another part, where regrettably that kind of behavior was able to recur. So I was canny, to use a Scottish word. I was careful, and I didn't do what in my trade we call front door investigating. I did a lot of undercover inquiry pursuit. I pursued undercover inquiries by means of getting the cooperation of some people in the church that I knew, because oddly enough, coincidentally enough, much of my journalistic career was spent reporting on church matters. I ran for the British commercial television. I ran a whole department making television programs about ethics and belief. So obviously, church matters got covered in that remit. So I had contacts inside the church and also inside law enforcement, who were also very helpful to me. And this was in case, just in case, the church wanted to cover this up. And those internal inquiries went on and led me in certain directions. We had a range of priests who might possibly be the what we call in our, almost as if we were detectives, we called him our prime suspect. It narrowed down in the end to one individual who seemed to have most likely the opportunity, and the timing fitted. He was moved from the Catholic parish where he was at the time of my birth. He was moved only months away from the date of my birth to somewhere else entirely. And when he reappeared in the church records, he reappeared with a slightly changed name. So all of this looked rather suspicious.
Right.
And we began to think that he might well be the man, the culprit. But DNA, as we were saying, is a relatively new science at the time. I began this search in the early 2000s, and it became clear eventually that he did not fit the bill. His DNA or the DNA of his relatives was very different from mine. It could not possibly have been this man. So we then were relying more and more on DNA analysis itself, and I had my gene samples logged into many of these genealogical websites that are open to the public for a subscription fee, of course, and everything from Ancestry.com to 23andMe to MyHeritage.com. In the end, I was my DNA samples were logged with, I think it was in the end, 11 different databases. And I was constantly being, as the algorithms worked through and through all these databases, looking for matches, I was being compared with something like 11 million other people. So every now and again, a sort of match would come up. Not very close, something in the order of a second or third cousin, maybe. So that meant that we shared an ancestor, possibly a great-great-grandparent. And the interesting thing about them is that many of them seemed to be living in Germany, had German names, were German nationals. And this was a fascinating new direction. So we began to wonder if this could possibly be new and more reliable line of inquiry. So that's what we pursued next. And the book tells how I went on to do that. It's a lengthy and drawn-out process, very frustrating in that we never got to grips with anyone really close to me. And Germany is not as well is not as far down the road of interest and enthusiasm for genetic research. Perhaps that's understandable in view of the Nazi history and indeed matters of personal privacy. Private information is a very delicate matter too for Germany for another reason besides the Nazi era. There was, of course, the Nazi era was followed by the communist era in the eastern part of the country and the infamous Stasi secret police. So Germans are not in general as open to the kind of inquiry we were doing as we might have hoped, and that didn't help things.
David, I'd love to just shift gears here a little bit and talk a little bit about how not knowing who your father was actually affected you, or if it did. You know, was it, you know, when you were growing up, was it one of those things like, yeah, well, I'm me and I don't care? I mean, sometimes children who don't know their parents, like adoptive children, you know, they go through this stage of like, I'm me and that was them and oh well, I have great parents and life is wonderful, and then all of a sudden, boom, they have this burning need to find out. And so I'm wondering what kind of effect all this had on you. I mean, obviously some, because you actually chose a career that, you know, my guess would be that it, being very curious about what was really going on, probably led you to being an investigative reporter. Would you say that makes sense?
Well, you bring up some interesting thoughts and some interesting parallels, especially with adopted individuals. For a large part of my life, the early part of my life, I did, as you say, profess not to care about it very much. I think I internalized something that was made very clear to me as a child. I don't remember being told out loud, don't bring this topic up or stay away from this whole subject. But that's in fact what I sensed.
Right.
Children can pick up on all sorts of clues.
Absolutely.
And warning signs.
Yeah.
In a close family like us. I suspect that's what happened, that I internalized the sense that this was a topic that should not be approached.
Mm-hmm.
And then I invented my own reasons for not approaching it. Like I say, in my teens, I said I didn't care. It wasn't important to me. It was absolutely irrelevant to me establishing my own identity as a young man. And that went on for some time. Quite a long time, in fact. And it was only in my 40s when I began to feel the weight of this secrecy oppressive to me, and I wanted to clear it up. And you put your finger on something, one element of it that is very important. I think it's no accident that I went into journalism trying to find things out about things
right.
that I didn't know about initially.
Yeah.
I mean, I had been brought up in this atmosphere of secrecy and silence.
Yeah.
And guess what? I wanted desperately to do a job that enabled me to find things out, especially about people and institutions who wanted to keep secrets.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you just had that burning urge to know. It's just, you know, what's that expression? What we don't know doesn't hurt us or whatever, but no, that's not it. I can't think of it. What we don't address will kill us I don't know what the expression is. I can't remember it exactly. I thought I had it on the tip of my tongue, but I guess I don't. But, you know, it's like what we don't know, you know, and it's there, and we do need to know. That's that part of us, that soul inside of us. Would you say that's accurate?
I did find out in the end that I did want to know, absolutely.
We are going to take another short break, David. When we come back, in your book, you talk about being an alcoholic for almost 30 years, and I'd love you to tell our listeners a little bit more about that. So listeners, stay with us here. More to come.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next. Oh gosh, Debbie, my new puppy is pulling me in a million different directions. One day it's off to the groomers, the next it's the trainer. Between that and my job, my head is spinning.
Oh, Quinn, it sounds like you need a one-stop shop for all your pet care needs.
That is exactly what I need.
Well, then you should come down and see me and my team at Doggy Works. We offer daily dog daycare, walking, training, and grooming all from one spot. We've got all the services you need to give your dog the best care it can get, all under one roof.
That sounds amazing. Where can I find you?
It's easy. We're located right on Route 14 in Pembroke, and we're open 12 hours a day, Monday to Friday. And if you can't make it during the week, we're by appointment for grooming and training on Saturdays, too. Your dog deserves the absolute best, so check us out at doggyworksllc.com or call us at 781-754-0329.
Who doesn't go to the hair salon to liven up their looks? But sometimes you look worse on the way out than you did walking in. You can expect something different at Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing. With a super modern feel that can hardly be mistaken for suburban, they're a full-service hair salon offering cuts, color, highlighting, and formal design. With an impressive following and 5-star rating on Google, Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing won't disappoint. I know, because I can tell you from my own experience, I felt transformed and you will too. So if you're looking to turn a few heads, call Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing today at 508-322-9468. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Conveniently located in the Wareham Crossing Shopping Plaza, call them today or book online at DelariaWareham.com. You'll be thrilled. I know you will. Tired of living in space that's lost its luster? Your home is more than just a house. It's where memories are made. At Clemens Painting, they understand the importance of transforming your space. They pride themselves on attention to detail, cleanliness, and exceptional customer service. Only using the highest quality materials and techniques to ensure a long-lasting finish, they won't disappoint. Fully insured and offering free estimates, the fall is the perfect time to spruce up your space. Imagine coming home to a fresh new look that reflects your style. Let Scott at Clemens Painting bring your vision to life. From classic to contemporary, Scott will help you fall in love with your home again. I did and couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076 or find Clemens Painting on Facebook.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, welcome back. My guest tonight is David Tereshchuk, and he has written a book, A Question of Paternity. It is about finding his own father. Welcome back, David.
Hello there.
So, you in your book, you talked about being an alcoholic for almost 30 years, which really that doesn't even surprise me. So I'm just wondering, was that because you felt, what brought you, you tell us, what brought you to becoming an alcoholic?
Well, alcoholism is a very difficult disease to define and really get a handle on. I'm not going to say that I know the cause, because I think the cause is that I just am an alcoholic. I suspect it might be genealogical or genetic. I have alcoholics in my family tree.
Did your mother drink?
No, absolutely not. It was a teetotal household, but that, I think, was a reaction to the fact that my grandfather, who I never knew because he died before I was born, was well known as an alcoholic.
Oh,
so that's that's always possible. But in terms of my own experience with it, I began drinking at the age of 13.
Oh,
not the earliest that I've heard people start, but quite early. And as I say, I'm not sure that I want to point to my family conditions as a direct cause, but there was something about that atmosphere of secrecy and a sense of suppression of the truth and suppression of any idea of addressing the truth that I suspect may have prompted me to want some kind of relief of some sort.
And, self-medicating, perhaps.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one term for it, anyway. But I certainly found, I was very fearful as a kid, very reserved, very inward-looking, and very nervous about where I stood in the world for all the reasons that we talked about earlier. I just didn't know exactly who I was in many sorts of ways. And alcohol seemed like an answer. It certainly dealt with my fear of the world. Alcohol enabled me to be quite reckless, and for a while, certainly in my youthful years, when I first went into the job of journalism, I was kind of noted for a degree of recklessness that rebounded to my advantage. I mean, I took risks. Mm-hmm. I took risks of my life in some situations. And in the end, I ended up getting better stories, perhaps, because as a result of it. And it was some kind of advantage for a while. But as we all know, or we all ought to know, alcoholism is a progressive disease. It just has a course, which is inevitable if you don't stop drinking. And it just got a bigger and bigger grip on me. And what few positive advantages it gave me eventually disappeared. Right. I just ended up a shambling mess who couldn't do the job at all, and I became unemployed and unemployable. And it was very clear that my life was unmanageable, and I was helpless in the face of alcohol. I had to stop drinking it.
Did it ever bother you that you didn't have a father?
I think at certain stages of my childhood it did. Yes, I remember as a kid inventing fantastical stories about who my father might have been. That's true of many people who don't know their parentage. I know many adopted people who say they have the same fantasies too. Some strange aristocratic character must have come through our village and had a liaison with my mother in some sort of fairy tale way that I now find ridiculous, but in fact, at the time, I remember thinking as a child, this is ridiculous. This could possibly have happened. But on the other hand, I wanted to make up something.
People have a need to know. People want explanations.
And if you don't know, you'll end up starting to invent quite often if you're at all creative. I rather suspect I was.
Well, yeah, journalism is certainly a creative pursuit. David, what about relationships? Did this whole childhood, not knowing your father and your mother's story, how did that affect, or did it affect relationships? Like, were you able to have close relationships?
For a long time, it was my relationships are characterized by unreliability. I have to say, it's very hard to be in a relationship with a drinking alcoholic.
Well, that, yes, right.
And it was not easy. It was not easy for anyone who knew me. Mm-hmm. And the closer you were to me, the more difficult it was. So, relationships were never easy. That changed completely when I stopped drinking. It's very interesting to note.
Oh, it did. Okay, so then when you stopped drinking, and then were you able to ever get into a romantic relationship? And I guess part B of that question would also be, do you have close relationships in general? Or have you sort of stayed, sometimes people who have, they've got some stuff that they have carried with them may not necessarily feel, like you said, you don't really know who you were or where you were in the world. That could conceivably be difficult to develop any kind of really significant or meaningful relationships. I'm wondering, was that something that you encountered?
Well, my life changed utterly when I stopped drinking alcohol, and it wasn't long before I was perfectly capable of being in a close relationship and be responsible in it in a way that I never could before. I was pathologically promiscuous when I was drinking, and that stopped when I stopped drinking. Mm-hmm. I got married. I was married for 25 years. To a lovely woman, and it only ended because she died. Oh. And I've been able to find love in other ways since. Mm-hmm. In one other way in particular, I'm in a very close relationship now with someone else, not married, but very, very close. Mm-hmm. And I know many sober alcoholics say this, but I believe I'm a different person from what I was before. I'm still the same person in many ways, but in these really important kind of ways, I'm utterly, utterly different.
Mm-hmm. You've gone through quite a journey in your life. David, we are coming into our last segment. We're going to take a break. Listeners, stay with us here. We will be right back.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next.
You need help around the house. You need a handyman. How do you find just the one you're looking for? Go to locally owned and operated handymanconnection.com. Handyman Connection puts you in touch with one of their carefully screened and background-checked craftsmen. You get the best help around for maintenance, installation, and remodeling services, carpentry, tiling, and flooring, and assistance with aging-in-place upgrades to your home. Handyman Connection also provides you with free in-home estimates and a one-year written warranty on labor from one of their experienced professionals. Call 781-829-3030. Or visit handymanconnection.com. Your connection to quality craftsmen on the South Shore. One call, one connection.
Need a reliable place for your pet? Does your dog crave extra stimulation instead of social isolation? Sign up for doggy daycare at the Dog's Den in Pembroke. With two separate yards and plenty of supervision, your dog will have a ball and tug-of-war toys and plenty of new friends. The Dog's Den also specializes in grooming. Each groomer at the Dog's Den has decades of experience and will leave your furry friend refreshed and ready for their next adventure. Schedule your grooming or daycare today at thedogsdengrooming.com.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
Tired of living in space that's lost its luster? Your home is more than just a house. It's where memories are made. At Clemens Painting, they understand the importance of transforming your space. They pride themselves on attention to detail, cleanliness, and exceptional customer service. Only using the highest quality materials and techniques to ensure a long-lasting finish, they won't disappoint. Fully insured and offering free estimates, the fall is the perfect time to spruce up your space. Imagine coming home to a fresh new look that reflects your style. Let Scott at Clemens Painting bring your vision to life. From classic to contemporary, Scott will help you fall in love with your home again. I did and couldn't be happier. Call Scott today at 781-710-0076 or find Clemens Painting on Facebook.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back. You are listening to the Francesca Luca Show. I am speaking to David Tarashuk. He has written a book, it's a memoir, actually, I apologize, A Question of Paternity. This is our last segment, so if you've missed a part of the show, you'll want to mosey on over to my iTunes page and listen there. Very, very interesting story. David, when you were writing your memoir, I imagine that was very different from journalistic writing. You got to really explore your own personal struggles, like alcoholism that we've been talking about in the last segment, or feelings of insecurity despite incredible professional success. Did you find that writing the memoir was more painful or more healing? Or both?
Well, I would say this, Francesca. Journalism has been a wonderful profession for me to pursue. I ended up reporting on everything from local parish sewing circles right up to international conference tables, and of course all the revolutions and wars, especially wars of liberation in Africa that I covered. So there's a great range of subjects that I've been able to research and write about. But when it came to writing this book, I think it was the most difficult thing that I've ever tackled.
I can't imagine.
I could write about anything, but not write about myself. I had to put my nose to the grindstone, as it were, and do it whether I liked the sensation or didn't like the sensation. I still wanted to apply the kind of sense of inquiry that impelled me in my professional journalism to this personal story.
How long did it take you to write the book?
The research went on for many years.
Right.
But I think when putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboard started in earnest about 8 years ago.
Wow.
So I think in terms of active writing, that's how long it took.
The book is as much about finding yourself, obviously, as it is about finding your paternity. What were some of the main things you discovered about yourself, David?
Well, one of them's rather ironic for a journalist, at least for this particular journalist anyway. I find it deeply ironic let me say something first. I learned a lot about my mother that I did not know before. And so I ended up with a wholly different attitude, I think, towards her. I think the only appropriate response to what I learned about her life and her decision-making, I mean, I didn't understand why she kept the secret from me for so long, and then when there was an opportunity to tell me about it, she perhaps gave me something of a red herring to follow. But nonetheless, I did learn a lot about her own makeup, her own experience as a child before I ever came along.
Like what?
The fact that she was fostered away from our family for a good slice of her childhood,
okay,
and only came back in her early teens.
Yeah, so she did not have an easy childhood as well.
Absolutely not. And I think overall, looking at the whole story over the decades, I come to the conclusion that the only possible approach or the only possible attitude I can have towards her is that of compassion.
Compassion. I thought that might be the word you'd use. If you could speak to your mother right now, what would you say to her?
I'd say, I'm sorry you did it, and I don't understand totally why you did, but I'm absolutely understanding of how much difficulty you must have felt you were in, and that you did not want to, in the end, confront the truth from me, and that is your right.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that there was a need at some point in your life to forgive her? Were you ever angry at her?
Oh, sure. If you're a kid and you've got a secret being kept from you, it's infuriating. And I think I carry that fury bubbling inside of me one way or another for a long, long time. And in the end, I was asked, in fact, by one of the people who was helping me do the search internally in the Catholic Church when that story was at the top of mind for investigating, a wonderful priest who just asked me, just as you did, have you forgiven your mother? And I found myself saying, yes, of course. And I also appreciated that, I've come to appreciate that forgiveness is not an action, a sudden action. Forgiveness is a process. And I've been living through the process of forgiving her by writing this book.
Yeah, I was. Forgiveness for lack of a better word, funny thing, you know. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you condone a person's actions, but that you forgive them anyway, because it's kind of like, if you don't, it's taking up real estate in your head. And speaking of which, do you still find that you think about this and still have questions and are curious about this, or have you really closed the door and the book on this, or the chapter on this in your life?
There are unanswered questions still. I mean, I still don't know absolutely in an ironclad way who the person was who fathered me. I mean, that's still an open question. But the other thing that I learned about myself in the whole process that I was referring to as being a kind of irony is that I'm no longer, you know, obsessed with the gripping
right.
sort of tight, impelling desire to find out everything I possibly can.
Well, you've written a book about it too, so that, you know, obviously, right, you know, that just put a lot of those thoughts down on paper. However,
yes.
that's, it's, you know, I haven't had a chance to read the book, but there's a difference between journaling and writing a book. I've got to assume that at some point in your life you did a lot of journaling around all this.
I think the whole process of self-analysis can take all sorts of different forms. And I've spent the last 30-plus years living a life that's dedicated to being more open than I could ever be beforehand. I haven't made a practice of telling everybody everything about myself all the time, and that would be incredibly tedious on other people around me. But I've become a lot more reflective than I used to be,
mm-hmm.
The possibility of self-questioning is now something of a daily habit, I'm nowhere near as impulsive as I used to be. And I think quite a lot about what I do before I do it.
Well, that comes with age, doesn't it, though, huh?
For some people, it's true, yeah.
David, we just have a few minutes left, so I don't mean to put you into a box, but what would you like the listeners to take away from this interview, other than being utterly fascinated with the story?
Well, one thing I would say is that if people are in a situation where a deep and troubling secret is weighing upon them, ask about it, pursue it. That would be my suggestion. You don't have to. Other people have different ways of dealing with secrets, but I found for myself that digging into it was. It was almost a crying necessity, and I'm very glad that I did.
Yeah,
it's not just the secrets of individual families, but any society whose culture mm-hmm. encourages or enforces that kind of secrecy on a family,
right.
Like the attitude towards illegitimacy in our society. It's better than it used to be, but of course, there are still traces of that kind of taboo and sense of inappropriateness that hangs around the notion of the word still used, certainly in Britain, is illegitimacy,
right.
and that's a terrible stamp to put on a child.
Right. Well, David, I want to thank you very, very much for being on the show. Listeners, the name of the book is called A Question of Paternity. You can get it, I'm sure, anywhere on Amazon. And David, thanks again for being on the show. It's really been a pleasure. And thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing your story. It's really been a pleasure.
Thanks, Francesca.
All right. We've got to wrap things up and say goodnight. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you missed part of the show, you can hop on over to my iTunes page or Spotify. Listen there. Love it if you'd leave a review. And we'll see you next week, same time, same place. Make it a great week.
Agora tá chorando pelo que perdeu.